What did you see? He told her about the wolves and the ruined house and the two rock spires. As he talked, Annabeth started pacing, looking more and more agitated. You don't remember where this house is? She asked. Jason shook his head. But I'm sure I've been there before. Redwoods, she mused, could be Northern California. And the she-wolf. I've studied goddesses, spirits, and monsters my whole life. I've never heard of Lupa. She said the enemy was a her. I thought maybe it was Hera, but... I wouldn't trust Hera. But I don't think she's the enemy. And that thing rising out of the earth... Annabeth's expression darkened. You've got to stop it. You know what it is, don't you? He asked. Or at least, you've got a guess. I saw your face last night at the campfire. You looked at Chiron like it was suddenly dawning on you, but you didn't want to scare us. Annabeth hesitated. Jason, the thing about prophecies, the more you know, the more you try to change them, and that can be disastrous. Chiron believes it's better that you find your own path, find out things in your own time. If he'd told me everything he knew before my first quest with Percy, I've got to admit, I'm not sure I would have been able to go through with it. For your quest, it's even more important.
That bad, huh?
Not if you succeed. At least, I hope not.
But I don't even know where to start. Where am I supposed to go?
Follow the monsters, Annabeth suggested.
Jason thought about that. The storm spirit who'd attacked him at the Grand Canyon had said he was being recalled to his boss. If Jason could track the storm spirits, he might be able to find the person controlling them, and maybe that would lead him to Hera's prison.
Okay, he said. How do I find storm winds? Personally, I'd ask a wind god, Annabeth said. Aeolus is the master of all the winds, but he's a little unpredictable. No one finds him unless he wants to be found. I'd try one of the four seasonal wind gods that work for Aeolus. The nearest one, the one who has the most dealings with heroes, is Boreas, the north wind.
So if I looked him up on Google Maps...
Oh, he's not hard to find, Annabeth promised. He settled in North America like all the other gods, so of course he picked the oldest northern settlement about as far north as you can go.
Maine? Jason guessed.
Farther.
Jason tried to envision a map. What was farther north than Maine? The oldest northern settlement. Canada, he decided.
Quebec.
Annabeth smiled.
I hope you speak French.
Jason actually felt a spark of excitement. Quebec, at least now he had a goal. Find the north wind, track down the storm spirits, find out who they worked for and where that ruined house was. Free Hera. All in 4 days. Cake.
Thanks, Annabeth.
He looked at the photo booth pictures still in his hand. So, you said it was dangerous being a child of Zeus. Whatever happened to Thalia?
Oh, she's fine, Annabeth said. She became a hunter of Artemis, one of the handmaidens of the goddess. They roam around the country killing monsters. We don't see them at camp very often.
Jason glanced over at the huge statue of Zeus. He understood why Thalia had slept in this alcove. It was the only place in the cabin not in hippie Zeus's line of sight. And even that hadn't been enough. She'd chosen to follow Artemis and be part of a group rather than stay in this cold, drafty temple alone with her 20-foot-tall dad, Jason's dad, glowering down at her. Eat voltage. Jason didn't have any trouble understanding Thalia's feelings. He wondered if there was a hunter's group for guys.
Who's the other kid in the photo? he asked.
The sandy-haired guy.
Annabeth's expression tightened. Touchy subject.
That's Luke, she said. He's dead now.
Jason decided it was best not to ask more, but the way Annabeth said Luke's name, he wondered if maybe Percy Jackson wasn't the only boy Annabeth had ever liked. He focused again on Thalia's face. He kept thinking this photo of her was important. He was missing something. Jason felt a strange sense of connection to this other child of Zeus, someone who might understand his confusion, maybe even answer some questions. But another voice inside him, an insistent whisper, said, "Dangerous. Stay away."
"How old is she now?" he asked.
"Hard to say. She was a tree for a while. Now she's immortal."
"What?"
His expression must have been pretty good, because Annabeth laughed.
"Don't worry. It's not something all children of Zeus go through. It's a long story. But, well, she was out of commission for a long time. If she'd aged regularly, she'd be in her 20s now. But she still looks the same as in that picture, like she's about, well, about your age. 15 or 16?
Something the she-wolf had said in his dream nagged at Jason. He found himself asking, "What's her last name?" Annabeth looked uneasy.
"She didn't use a last name, really. If she had to, she'd use her mom's, but they didn't get along. Thalia ran away when she was pretty young."
Jason waited.
"Grace," Annabeth said. "Thalia Grace."
Jason's fingers went numb. The picture fluttered to the floor.
"You okay?" Annabeth asked.
A shred of memory had ignited, maybe a tiny piece that Hera had forgotten to steal. Or maybe she'd left it there on purpose, just enough for him to remember that name and know that digging up his past was terribly, terribly dangerous.
"You should be dead,"
Chiron had said. It wasn't a comment about Jason beating the odds as a loner. Chiron knew something specific, something about Jason's family. The she-wolf's words in his dream finally made sense to him, her clever joke at his expense. He could imagine Lupa growling a wolfish laugh.
"What is it?" Annabeth pressed.
Jason couldn't keep this to himself. It would kill him, and he had to get Annabeth's help. If she knew Thalia, maybe she could advise him.
"You have to swear not to tell anyone else," he said.
"Jason, swear it," he urged.
"Until I figure out what's going on, what this all means."
He rubbed the burned tattoos on his forearm.
"You have to keep a secret."
Annabeth hesitated, but her curiosity won out.
"All right. Until you tell me it's okay, I won't share what you say with anyone else. I swear on the river Styx."
Thunder rumbled even louder than usual for the cabin. "You are our saving grace," the wolf had snarled. Jason picked up the photo from the floor. "My last name is Grace," he said. "This is my sister." Annabeth turned pale. Jason could see her wrestling with dismay, disbelief, anger. She thought he was lying. His claim was impossible. And part of him felt the same way. But as soon as he spoke the words, he knew they were true. Then the doors of the cabin burst open. Half a dozen campers spilled in, led by the bald guy from Iris, Butch.
"Hurry,"
he said. And Jason couldn't tell if his expression was excitement or fear.
"The dragon is back!"
Chapter 15. Piper. Piper woke up and immediately grabbed a mirror. There were plenty of those in the Aphrodite cabin. She sat on her bunk, looked at her reflection, and groaned. She was still gorgeous. Last night after the campfire, she'd tried everything. She messed up her hair, washed the makeup off her face, cried to make her eyes red. Nothing worked. Her hair popped back to perfection. The magic makeup reapplied itself. Her eyes refused to get puffy or bloodshot. She would have changed clothes, but she had nothing to change into. The other Aphrodite campers offered her some, laughing behind her back, she was sure, but each outfit was even more fashionable and ridiculous than what she had on. Now, after a horrible night's sleep, still no change. Piper normally looked like a zombie in the morning, but her hair was styled like a supermodel's and her skin was perfect. Even that horrible zit at the base of her nose, which she'd had for so many days she'd started to call it Bob, had disappeared. She growled in frustration and raked her fingers through her hair. No use. The dew just popped back into place. She looked like Cherokee Barbie. From across the cabin, Drew called, "Oh, honey, it won't go away." Her voice dripped with false sympathy. "Mom's blessing will last at least another day, maybe a week if you're lucky." Piper gritted her teeth. "A week?" The other Aphrodite kids, about a dozen girls and five guys, smirked and snickered at her discomfort. Piper knew she should play cool, not let them get under her skin. She'd dealt with shallow, popular kids plenty of times. But this was different. These were her brothers and sisters, even if she had nothing in common with them. And how Aphrodite had managed to have so many kids so close in age, never mind. She didn't want to know.
"Don't worry, hon," Drew blotted her fluorescent lipstick. "You're thinking you don't belong here?"
"We couldn't agree more. Isn't that right, Mitchell?"
One of the guys flinched.
Yeah, sure."
"Mm-hmm."
Drew took out her mascara and checked her lashes. Everyone else watched, not daring to speak.
"So anyways, people, 15 minutes until breakfast. The cabin's not going to clean itself, and Mitchell, I think you've learned your lesson, right, sweetie? So you're on garbage patrol just for today, okay? Show Piper how it's done, 'cause I have a feeling she'll have that job soon, if she survives her quest. Now, get to work, everybody. It's my bathroom time."
Everybody started rushing around, making beds and folding clothes, while Drew scooped up her makeup kit, hair dryer, and brush, and marched into the bathroom. Someone inside yelped, and a girl about 11 was kicked out, hastily wrapped in towels with shampoo still in her hair. The door slammed shut, and the girl started to cry. A couple of older campers comforted her and wiped the bubbles out of her hair. "Seriously?" Piper said to no one in particular. "You let Drew treat you like this?" A few kids shot Piper nervous looks, like they might actually agree, but they said nothing. The campers kept working, though Piper couldn't see why the cabin needed much cleaning. It was a life-size dollhouse, with pink walls and white window trim. The lace curtains were pastel blue and green, which of course matched the sheets and feather comforters on all the beds. The guys had one row of bunks separated by a curtain, but their section of cabin was just as neat and orderly as the girls'. Something was definitely unnatural about that. Every camper had a wooden camp chest at the foot of their bunk with their name painted on it, and Piper guessed that the clothes in each chest were neatly folded and color-coordinated. The only bit of individualism was how the campers decorated their private bunk spaces. Each had slightly different pictures tacked up of whatever celebrities they thought were hot. A few had personal photos, too, but most were actors or singers or whatever. Piper hoped she might not see the poster. It had been almost a year since the movie, and she thought by now surely everyone had torn down those old tattered advertisements and tacked up something newer. But no such luck. She spotted one on the wall by the storage closet.
in the middle of a collage of famous heartthrobs. The title was lurid red, King of Sparta. Under that, the poster showed the leading man, a three-quarters shot of bare-chested bronze flesh, with ripped pectorals and six-pack abs. He was clad in only a Greek war kilt and a purple cape, sword in hand. He looked like he'd just been rubbed in oil, his short black hair gleaming and rivulets of sweat pouring off his rugged face, those dark, sad eyes facing the camera as if to say, "I will kill your men and steal your women! Ha ha!" It was the most ridiculous poster of all time. Piper and her dad had had a good laugh over it the first time they saw it. Then the movie made a bajillion dollars. The poster graphic popped up everywhere. Piper couldn't get away from it at school, walking down the street, even online. It became the poster, the most embarrassing thing in her life. And yeah, it was a picture of her dad. She turned away so no one would think she was staring at it. Maybe when everyone went to breakfast, she could tear it down and they wouldn't notice. She tried to look busy, but she didn't have any extra clothes to fold. She straightened her bed, then realized the top blanket was the one Jason had wrapped around her shoulders last night. She picked it up and pressed it to her face. It smelled of wood smoke, but unfortunately not of Jason. He was the only person who'd been genuinely nice to her after the claiming, like he cared about how she felt, not just about her stupid new clothes. God, she'd wanted to kiss him, but he'd seemed so uncomfortable, almost scared of her. She couldn't really blame him. She'd been glowing pink.
"Excuse me," said a voice by her feet.
The garbage patrol guy, Mitchell, was crawling around on all fours, picking up chocolate wrappers and crumpled notes from under the bunk beds. Apparently, the Aphrodite kids weren't 100% neat freaks after all. She moved out of his way.
"What did you do to make Drew mad?"
He glanced over at the bathroom door to make sure it was still closed.
"Last night, after you were claimed, I said you might not be so bad."
It wasn't much of a compliment, but Piper was stunned. An Aphrodite kid had actually stood up for her?
"Thanks," she said.
Mitchell shrugged.
"Yeah, well, see where it got me? But for what it's worth, welcome to Cabin 10.
A girl with blonde pigtails and braces raced up with a pile of clothes in her arms. She looked around furtively like she was delivering nuclear materials.
"I brought you these," she whispered.
"Piper, meet Lacey,"
Mitchell said, still crawling around on the floor.
"Hi,"
Lacey said breathlessly.
"You can change clothes. The blessing won't stop you. This is just, you know, a backpack, some rations, ambrosia and nectar for emergencies, some jeans, a few extra shirts and a warm jacket. The boots might be a little snug, but, well, we took up a collection. Good luck on your quest."
Lacey dumped the things on the bed and started to hurry away, but Piper caught her arm.
"Hold on. At least let me thank you. Why are you rushing off?"
Lacey looked like she might shake apart from nervousness.
"Oh, well, Drew might find out,"
Mitchell explained.
"I might have to wear the shoes of shame,"
Lacey gulped.
"The what?"
Piper asked. Lacey and Mitchell both pointed to a black shelf mounted in the corner of the room, like an altar. Displayed on it were a hideous pair of orthopedic nurse's shoes, bright white with thick soles.
"I had to wear them for a week once,"
Lacey whimpered.
"They don't go with anything."
"And there are worse punishments,"
Mitchell warned.
"Drew can charm speak, see? Not many Aphrodite kids have that power. But if she tries hard enough, she can get you to do some pretty embarrassing things. Piper, you're the first person I've seen in a long time who is able to resist her."
Charm speak.
Piper remembered last night the way the crowd at the campfire had swayed back and forth between Drew's opinion and hers.
"You mean, like, you could talk someone into doing things? Or giving you things? Like a car?
Oh, don't give Drew any ideas,
Lacey gasped.
But yeah,
Mitchell said.
She could do that.
So that's why she's head counselor, Piper said. She convinced you all? Mitchell picked a nasty wad of gum from under Piper's bed.
Nah, she inherited the post when Selena Beauregard died in the war. Drew was second oldest. Oldest camper automatically gets the post, unless somebody with more years or more completed quests wants to challenge, in which case there's a duel. But that hardly ever happens. Anyway, we've been stuck with Drew in charge since August. She decided to make some, changes in the way the cabin is run.
Yes, I did.
Suddenly, Drew was there, leaning against the bunk. Lacey squeaked like a guinea pig and tried to run, but Drew put an arm out to stop her. She looked down at Mitchell.
I think you missed some trash, sweetie. You'd better make another pass.
Piper glanced toward the bathroom and saw that Drew had dumped everything from the bathroom waste bin, some pretty nasty things, all over the floor. Mitchell sat up on his haunches. He glared at Drew like he was about to attack, which Piper would have paid money to see. But finally he snapped,
"Fine."
Drew smiled.
See, Piper, hon, we're a good cabin here. A good family.
Selena Beauregard, though, you could take a warning from her.
She was secretly passing information to Kronos in the Titan War. Helping the enemy.
Drew smiled all sweet and innocent, with her glittery pink makeup and her blow-dried hair lush and smelling like nutmeg. She looked like any popular teenage girl from any high school, but her eyes were as cold as steel. Piper got the feeling Drew was looking straight into her soul, pulling out her secrets.
Helping the enemy. Oh, none of the other cabins talk about it, Drew confided. They act like Selena Beauregard was a hero.
She sacrificed her life to make things right,
Mitchell grumbled.
She was a hero.
Mm-hmm, Drew said. Another day on garbage patrol, Mitchell. But anyways, Selena lost track of what this cabin is about. We match up cute couples at camp. Then we break them apart and start over. It's the best fun ever. We don't have any business getting involved in other stuff like wars and quests. I certainly haven't been on any quests. They're a waste of time.
Lacey raised her hand nervously.
But last night you said you wanted to go on a...
Drew glared at her, and Lacey's voice died.
Most of all, Drew continued, we certainly don't need our image tarnished by spies, do we, Piper?
Piper tried to answer, but she couldn't. There was no way Drew could know about her dreams or her dad's kidnapping, was there?
It's too bad you won't be around, Drew sighed. But if you survive your little quest, don't worry. I'll find somebody to match up with you. Maybe one of those gross Hephaestus guys. Or Clovis. He's pretty repulsive.
Drew looked her over with a mix of pity and disgust.
Honestly, I didn't think it was possible for Aphrodite to have an ugly child. But who was your father? Was he some sort of mutant? Or...
Tristan McLean, Piper snapped. As soon as she said it, she hated herself. She never, ever played the famous dad card. But Drew had driven her over the edge.
My dad's Tristan McLean.
The stunned silence was gratifying for a few seconds, but Piper felt ashamed of herself. Everybody turned and looked at the poster, her dad flexing his muscles for the whole world to see.
Oh my God!
Half the girls screamed at once.
Sweet, a guy said. The dude with the sword who killed that other dude in that movie?
He is so hot for an old guy,
a girl said, and then she blushed.
I mean, I'm sorry. I know he's your dad. That's so weird.
It's weird, all right, Piper agreed.
Do you think you could get me his autograph?
Another girl asked. Piper forced a smile. She couldn't say, if my dad survives.
Yeah, no problem, she managed.
The girl squealed in excitement, and more kids surged forward, asking a dozen questions at once. Have you ever been on the set? Do you live in a mansion? Do you have lunch with movie stars? Have you had your rite of passage? That one caught Piper off guard.
Rite of what? She asked.
The girls and guys giggled and shoved each other around like this was an embarrassing topic.
The rite of passage for an Aphrodite child, one explained. You get someone to fall in love with you, then you break their heart, dump them. Once you do that, you've proven yourself worthy of Aphrodite.
Piper stared at the crowd to see if they were joking. Breaking someone's heart on purpose? That's terrible. The others looked confused.
Why? A guy asked.
Oh my God, a girl said. I bet Aphrodite broke your dad's heart. I bet he never loved anyone again, did he? That's so romantic. When you have your rite of passage, you can be just like Mom.
Forget it, Piper yelled, a little louder than she'd intended. The other kids backed away.
I'm not breaking somebody's heart just for a stupid rite of passage.
Which, of course, gave Drew a chance to take back control.
Well, there you go, she cut in.
Selena said the same thing.
She broke the tradition, fell in love with that Beckendorf boy, and stayed in love. If you ask me, that's why things ended tragically for her.
That's not true,
Lacey squeaked. But Drew glared at her, and she immediately melted back into the crowd.
Hardly matters, Drew continued. Because, Piper, hon, you couldn't break anyone's heart anyway. And this nonsense about your dad being Tristan McLean, that's so begging for attention.
Several of the kids blinked uncertainly.
You mean he's not her dad? One asked.
Drew rolled her eyes.
Please. Now it's time for breakfast, people. And Piper here has to start that little quest. So let's get her packed and get her out of here.
Drew broke up the crowd and got everyone moving. She called them hun and dear, but her tone made it clear she expected to be obeyed. Mitchell and Lacey helped Piper pack. They even guarded the bathroom while Piper went in and changed into a better traveling outfit. The hand-me-downs weren't fancy, thank God. Just well-worn jeans, a t-shirt, a comfortable winter coat, and hiking boots that fit perfectly. She strapped her dagger, Catoptris, to her belt. When Piper came out, she felt almost normal again. The other campers were standing at their bunks while Drew came around and inspected. Piper turned to Mitchell and Lacey and mouthed, "Thank you." Mitchell nodded grimly. Lacey flashed a full braces smile. Piper doubted Drew had ever thanked them for anything. She also noticed that the King of Sparta poster had been wadded up and thrown in the trash. Drew's orders, no doubt. Even though Piper had wanted to take the poster down herself, now she was totally steamed. When Drew spotted her, she clapped in mock applause.
Very nice. Our little quest girl all dressed in dumpster clothes again. Now off you go. No need to eat breakfast with us. Good luck with whatever. Bye.
Piper shouldered her bag. She could feel everyone else's eyes on her as she walked to the door. She could just leave and forget about it. That would have been the easy thing. What did she care about this cabin? These shallow kids.
except that some of them had tried to help her. Some of them had even stood up to Drew for her. She turned at the door. "You know, you all don't have to follow Drew's orders." The other kids shifted. Several glanced at Drew, but she looked too stunned to respond. One managed. "She's our head counselor."
"She's a tyrant," Piper corrected. "You can think for yourselves. There's got to be more to Aphrodite than this."
"More than this," one kid echoed. "Think for ourselves," a second muttered.
"People," Drew screeched. "Don't be stupid. She's charm-speaking you."
"No," Piper said. "I'm just telling the truth."
At least Piper thought that was the case. She didn't understand exactly how this charm-speaking business worked, but she didn't feel like she was putting any special power into her words. She didn't want to win an argument by tricking people. That would make her no better than Drew. Piper simply meant what she said. Besides, even if she tried charm-speaking, she had a feeling it wouldn't work very well on another charm-speaker like Drew. Drew sneered at her.
"You may have a little power, Miss Movie Star, but you don't know the first thing about Aphrodite. You have such great ideas. What do you think this cabin is about, then? Tell them. Then maybe I'll tell them a few things about you, huh?"
Piper wanted to make a withering retort, but her anger turned to panic. She was a spy for the enemy, just like Selena Beauregard. An Aphrodite traitor. Did Drew know about that, or was she bluffing? Under Drew's glare, her confidence began to crumble.
"Not this," Piper managed. "Aphrodite is not about this."
Then she turned and stormed out before the others could see her blushing. Behind her, Drew started laughing.
"Not this. Hear that, people? She doesn't have a clue."
Piper promised herself she would never, ever go back to that cabin. She blinked away her tears and stormed across the green, not sure where she was going, until she saw the dragon swooping down from the sky. Chapter 16. Piper.
"Leo!" she yelled.
Sure enough, there he was, sitting atop a giant bronze death machine and grinning like a lunatic. Even before he landed, the camp alarm went up. A conch horn blew. All the satyrs started screaming, "Don't kill me!" Half the camp ran outside in a mixture of pajamas and armor. The dragon sat down right in the middle of the green, and Leo yelled,
"It's cool! Don't shoot!"
Hesitantly, the archers lowered their bows. The warriors backed away, keeping their spears and swords ready. They made a loose, wide ring around the metal monster. Other demigods hid behind their cabin doors or peeped out the windows. Nobody seemed anxious to get close. Piper couldn't blame them. The dragon was huge. It glistened in the morning sun like a living penny sculpture. Different shades of copper and bronze. A 60-foot-long serpent with steel talons and drill-bit teeth and glowing ruby eyes. It had bat-shaped wings twice its length that unfurled like metallic sails, making a sound like coins cascading out of a slot machine every time they flapped.
"It's beautiful," Piper muttered.
The other demigods stared at her like she was insane. The dragon reared its head and shot a column of fire into the sky. Campers scrambled away and hefted their weapons, but Leo slid calmly off the dragon's back. He held up his hands like he was surrendering, except he still had that crazy grin on his face.
"People of Earth, I come in peace," he shouted.
He looked like he'd been rolling around in the campfire. His army coat and his face were smeared with soot. His hands were grease-stained, and he wore a new tool belt around his waist.
His eyes were bloodshot. His curly hair was so oily it stuck up in porcupine quills, and he smelled strangely of Tabasco sauce. But he looked absolutely delighted.
Festus is just saying hello.
That thing is dangerous, an Ares girl shouted, brandishing her spear. Kill it now! Stand down, someone ordered. To Piper's surprise, it was Jason. He pushed through the crowd, flanked by Annabeth and that girl from the Hephaestus cabin, Nyssa. Jason gazed up at the dragon and shook his head in amazement. Leo, what have you done?
Found a ride, Leo beamed. You said I could go on the quest if I got you a ride. Well, I got you a Class A metallic flying bad boy. Festus can take us anywhere.
It has wings, Nyssa stammered. Her jaw looked like it might drop off her face.
Yeah, Leo said. I found them and reattached them.
But it never had wings. Where did you find them?
Leo hesitated, and Piper could tell he was hiding something.
In the woods, he said. Repaired his circuits, too, mostly, so no more problems with him going haywire.
Mostly? Nyssa asked. The dragon's head twitched. It tilted to one side, and a stream of black liquid, maybe oil, hopefully just oil, poured out of its ear all over Leo.
Just a few kinks to work out, Leo said.
But how did you survive? Nyssa was still staring at the creature in awe. I mean, the fire breath.
I'm quick, Leo said, and lucky. Now, am I on this quest or what?
Jason scratched his head. You named him Festus? You know that in Latin, Festus means happy? You want us to ride off to save the world on Happy the Dragon? The dragon twitched and shuddered and flapped his wings.
That's a yes, bro, Leo said. Now, I'd really suggest we get going, guys. I already picked up some supplies in the woods. And all these people with weapons are making Festus nervous.
Jason frowned. But we haven't planned anything yet. We can't just...
Go, Annabeth said.
She was the only one who didn't look nervous at all. Her expression was sad and wistful, like this reminded her of better times.
Jason, you've only got 3 days until the solstice now, and you should never keep a nervous dragon waiting. This is certainly a good omen. Go!
Jason nodded. Then he smiled at Piper. You ready, partner? Piper looked at the bronze dragon wings shining against the sky and those talons that could have shredded her to pieces.
You bet, she said.
Flying on the dragon was the most amazing experience ever, Piper thought. Up high, the air was freezing cold, but the dragon's metal hide generated so much heat, it was like they were flying in a protective bubble. Talk about seat warmers. And the grooves in the dragon's back were designed like high-tech saddles, so they weren't uncomfortable at all. Leo showed them how to hook their feet in the chinks of the armor, like in stirrups, and use the leather safety harnesses cleverly concealed under the exterior plating. They sat single file, Leo in front, then Piper, then Jason. And Piper was very aware of Jason right behind her. She wished he would hold on to her, maybe wrap his arms around her waist. But sadly, he didn't. Leo used the reins to steer the dragon into the sky like he'd been doing it all his life. The metal wings worked perfectly, and soon the coast of Long Island was just a hazy line behind them. They shot over Connecticut and climbed into the gray winter clouds. Leo grinned back at them.
Cool, right?
What if we get spotted? Piper asked.
The mist, Jason said. It keeps mortals from seeing magic things. If they spot us, they'll probably mistake us for a small plane or something. Piper glanced over her shoulder.
You sure about that?
No, he admitted.
Then Piper saw he was clutching a photo in his hand, a picture of a girl with dark hair. She gave Jason a quizzical look, but he blushed and put the photo in his pocket.
"We're making good time. Probably get there by tonight."
Piper wondered who the girl in the picture was, but she didn't want to ask, and if Jason didn't volunteer the information, that wasn't a good sign. Had he remembered something about his life before? Was that a photo of his real girlfriend? Stop it, she thought. You'll just torture yourself. She asked a safer question.
Where are we heading?
To find the god of the north wind, Jason said, and chase some storm spirits. Chapter 17. Leo.
Leo was totally buzzing. The expression on everyone's faces when he flew the dragon into camp? Priceless. He thought his cabin mates were going to bust a lug nut. Festus had been awesome, too. He hadn't blowtorched a single cabin or eaten any satyrs, even if he did dribble a little oil from his ear. Okay, a lot of oil. Leo could work on that later. So maybe Leo didn't seize the chance to tell everybody about Bunker 9 or the flying boat design. He needed some time to think about all that. He could tell them when he came back. If I come back, part of him thought. Nah, he'd come back. He'd scored a sweet magic tool belt from the bunker, plus a lot of cool supplies now safely stowed in his backpack. Besides, he had a fire-breathing, only slightly leaky dragon on his side. What could go wrong?
Well, the control disc could bust, the bad part of him suggested. Festus could eat you.
Okay, so the dragon wasn't quite as fixed as Leo might have let on. He'd worked all night attaching those wings, but he hadn't found an extra dragon brain anywhere in the bunker. Hey, they were under a time limit. 3 days until the solstice. They had to get going. Besides, Leo had cleaned the disc pretty well. Most of the circuits were still good. It would just have to hold together. His bad side started to think,
yeah, but what if...
Shut up, me, Leo said aloud.
What?
Piper asked.
Nothing, he said. Long night. I think I'm hallucinating. It's cool.
Sitting in front, Leo couldn't see their faces, but he assumed from their silence that his friends were not pleased to have a sleepless, hallucinating dragon driver.
Just joking.
Leo decided it might be good to change the subject.
So what's the plan, bro? You said something about catching wind, or breaking wind, or something.
As they flew over New England, Jason laid out the game plan. First, find some guy named Boreas and grill him for information.
His name is Boreas? Leo had to ask. What is he? The god of boring?
Second, Jason continued, they had to find those Venti that had attacked them at the Grand Canyon.
Can we just call them storm spirits? Leo asked. Venti makes them sound like evil espresso drinks.
And third, Jason finished, they had to find out who the storm spirits worked for, so they could find Hera and free her.
So you want to look for Dylan, the nasty storm dude, on purpose, Leo said. The guy who threw me off the skywalk and sucked Coach Hedge into the clouds.
That's about it, Jason said. Well, there may be a wolf involved, too, but I think she's friendly. She probably won't eat us. Unless we show weakness. Jason told them about his dream. The big nasty mother wolf and a burned-out house with stone spires growing out of the swimming pool.
Uh-huh, Leo said. But you don't know where this place is.
Nope, Jason admitted. There's also giants, Piper added. The prophecy said the giants' revenge.
Hold on, Leo said. Giants? Like, more than one? Why can't it be just one giant who wants revenge?
I don't think so, Piper said. I remember in some of the old Greek stories, there was something about an army of giants.
Great, Leo muttered. Of course, with our luck, it's an army. So you know anything else about these giants? Didn't you do a bunch of myth research for that movie with your dad?
Your dad's an actor? Jason asked. Leo laughed.
I keep forgetting about your amnesia. Forgetting about amnesia. That's funny. But yeah, her dad's Tristan McClane.
Sorry. What was he in?
It doesn't matter, Piper said quickly. The giants. Well, there were lots of giants in Greek mythology. But if I'm thinking of the right ones, they were bad news. Huge, almost impossible to kill. They could throw mountains and stuff. I think they were related to the Titans. They rose from the earth after Kronos lost the war. I mean, the first Titan War, thousands of years ago. And they tried to destroy Olympus. If we're talking about the same giants.
Chiron said it was happening again, Jason remembered. The last chapter. That's what he meant. No wonder he didn't want us to know all the details.
Leo whistled. So, giants who can throw mountains. Friendly wolves that will eat us if we show weakness. Evil espresso drinks. Gotcha. Maybe this isn't the time to bring up my psycho babysitter.
Is that another joke? Piper asked. Leo told them about Tia Kaida, who was really Hera, and how she'd appeared to him at camp. He didn't tell them about his fire abilities. That was still a touchy subject, especially after Nyssa had told him fire demigods tended to destroy cities and stuff. Besides, then Leo would have to get into how he'd caused his mom's death, and... No, he wasn't ready to go there. He did manage to tell about the night she died, not mentioning the fire, just saying the machine shop collapsed. It was easier without having to look at his friends, just keeping his eyes straight ahead as they flew. And he told them about the strange woman in earthen robes who seemed to be asleep and seemed to know the future. Leo estimated the whole state of Massachusetts passed below them before his friends spoke. That's disturbing, Piper said.
About sums it up, Leo agreed. Thing is, everybody says don't trust Hera. She hates demigods. And the prophecy said we'd cause death if we unleash her rage. So I'm wondering, why are we doing this?
She chose us, Jason said. All three of us. We're the first of the seven who have to gather for the great prophecy. This quest is the beginning of something much bigger. That didn't make Leo feel any better, but he couldn't argue with Jason's point. It did feel like this was the start of something huge. He just wished that if there were four more demigods destined to help them, they'd show up quick. Leo didn't want to hog all the terrifying, life-threatening adventures. Besides, Jason continued, helping Hera is the only way I can get back my memory. And that dark spire in my dream seemed to be feeding on Hera's energy. If that thing unleashes a king of the giants by destroying Hera, not a good trade-off, Piper agreed. At least Hera is on our side, mostly. Losing her would throw the gods into chaos. She's the main one who keeps peace in the family. And a war with the giants could be even more destructive than the Titan War. Jason nodded. Chiron also talked about worse forces stirring on the solstice, with its being a good time for dark magic and all. Something that could awaken if Hera were sacrificed on that day. And this mistress who's controlling the storm spirits, the one who wants to kill all the demigods?
Might be that weird sleeping lady, Leo finished. Dirt woman, fully awake? Not something I want to see.
But who is she? Jason asked. And what does she have to do with giants?
Good questions, but none of them had answers.
They flew in silence while Leo wondered if he'd done the right thing, sharing so much. He'd never told anyone about that night at the warehouse. Even if he hadn't given them the whole story, it still felt strange, like he'd opened up his chest and taken out all the gears that made him tick. His body was shaking, and not from the cold. He hoped Piper, sitting behind him, couldn't tell. "The forge and dove shall break the cage." Wasn't that the prophecy line? That meant Piper and he would have to figure out how to break into that magic rock prison, assuming they could find it. Then they'd unleash Hera's rage, causing a lot of death. Well, that sounded fun. Leo had seen Tia Kaida in action. She liked knives, snakes, and putting babies in roaring fires. Yeah, definitely let's unleash her rage. Great idea. Festus kept flying. The wind got colder, and below them snowy forests seemed to go on forever. Leo didn't know exactly where Quebec was. He'd told Festus to take them to the Palace of Boreas, and Festus kept going north. Hopefully the dragon knew the way, and they wouldn't end up at the North Pole.
"Why don't you get some sleep?" Piper said in his ear. "You were up all night."
Leo wanted to protest, but the word sleep sounded really good.
"You won't let me fall off?"
Piper patted his shoulder.
"Trust me, Valdez. Beautiful people never lie."
"Right," he muttered.
He leaned forward against the warm bronze of the dragon's neck and closed his eyes. Chapter 18. Leo. It seemed he slept only for seconds, but when Piper shook him awake, the daylight was fading.
"We're here," she said.
Leo rubbed the sleep out of his eyes. Below them, a city sat on a cliff overlooking a river. The plains around it were dusted with snow, but the city itself glowed warmly in the winter sunset. Buildings crowded together inside high walls like a medieval town, way older than any place Leo had seen before. In the center was an actual castle. At least Leo assumed it was a castle. With massive red brick walls and a square tower with a peaked green gabled roof.
"Tell me that's Quebec and not Santa's workshop," Leo said.
"Yeah, Quebec City," Piper confirmed. "One of the oldest cities in North America, founded around 1600 or so."
Leo raised an eyebrow.
"Your dad do a movie about that too?"
She made a face at him, which Leo was used to, but it didn't quite work with her new glamorous makeup.
"I read sometimes, okay? Just because Aphrodite claimed me doesn't mean I have to be an airhead."
"Feisty," Leo said. "So you know so much. What's that castle?"
"A hotel, I think."
Leo laughed.
"No way."
But as they got closer, Leo saw she was right. The grand entrance was bustling with doormen, valets, and porters taking bags. Sleek black luxury cars idled in the drive. People in elegant suits and winter cloaks hurried to get out of the cold.
"The North Wind is staying in a hotel?" Leo said. "That can't be..."
"Heads up, guys," Jason interrupted. "We got company." Leo looked below and saw what Jason meant. Rising from the top of the tower were two winged figures, angry angels with nasty-looking swords. Festus didn't like the angel guys. He swooped to a halt in midair, wings beating and talons bared, and made a rumbling sound in his throat that Leo recognized. He was getting ready to blow fire.
"Steady, boy," Leo muttered.
Something told him the angels would not take kindly to getting torched.
"I don't like this," Jason said. "They look like storm spirits."
At first, Leo thought he was right. But as the angels got closer, he could see they were much more solid than Venti. They looked like regular teenagers except for their icy white hair and feathery purple wings. Their bronze swords were jagged like icicles. Their faces looked similar enough that they might have been brothers, but they definitely weren't twins. One was the size of an ox, with a bright red hockey jersey, baggy sweatpants, and black leather cleats. The guy clearly had been in too many fights, because both his eyes were black, and when he bared his teeth, several of them were missing. The other guy looked like he just stepped off one of Leo's mom's 1980s rock album covers. Journey, maybe, or Hall & Oates, or something even lamer. His ice-white hair was long and feathered into a mullet. He wore pointy-toed leather shoes, designer pants that were way too tight, and a god-awful silk shirt with the top three buttons open. Maybe he thought he looked like a groovy love god, but the guy couldn't have weighed more than 90 pounds, and he had a bad case of acne. The angels pulled up in front of the dragon and hovered there, swords at the ready. The hockey ox grunted,
"No clearance."
"Excuse me," Leo said. "You have no flight plan on file," explained the groovy love god. On top of his other problems, he had a French accent so bad Leo was sure it was fake. "This is restricted airspace."
"Destroy them?"
The ox showed off his gap-toothed grin. The dragon began to hiss steam, ready to defend them. Jason summoned his golden sword, but Leo cried,
"Hold on! Let's have some manners here, boys. Can I at least find out who has the honor of destroying me?"
"I am Cal," the ox grunted.
He looked very proud of himself, like he'd taken a long time to memorize that sentence.
"That's short for Calais," the love god said. "Sadly, my brother cannot say words with more than two syllables."
"Pizza, hockey, destroy,"
Cal offered.
"Which includes his own name," the love god finished.
"I am Cal,"
Cal repeated.
"And this is Zethys, my brother."
"Wow," Leo said. "That was almost three sentences, man. Way to go."
Cal grunted, obviously pleased with himself.
"Stupid buffoon," his brother grumbled. "They make fun of you. But no matter, I am Zethys, which is short for Zethys, and the lady there."
He winked at Piper, but the wink was more like a facial seizure.
"She can call me anything she likes. Perhaps she would like to have dinner with a famous demigod before we must destroy you?"
Piper made a sound like gagging on a cough drop. "That's a truly horrifying offer."
"It is no problem,"
Zethys wiggled his eyebrows.
"We are a very romantic people, we Boreads."
"Boreads?" Jason cut in. "Do you mean like the sons of Boreas?"
"Ah, so you've heard of us,"
Zethys looked pleased.
"We are our father's gatekeepers. So you understand we cannot have unauthorized people flying in his airspace on creaky dragons, scaring the silly mortal peoples."
He pointed below, and Leo saw that the mortals were starting to take notice. Several were pointing up, not with alarm yet, more with confusion and annoyance, like the dragon was a traffic helicopter flying too low.
"Which is sadly why, unless this is an emergency landing," Zethys said,
brushing his hair out of his acne-covered face,
"we will have to destroy you painfully."
"Destroy!"
Cal agreed, with a little more enthusiasm than Leo thought necessary.
"Wait," Piper said. "This is an emergency landing."
"Oh!"
Cal looked so disappointed, Leo almost felt sorry for him. Zethys studied Piper, which, of course, he'd already been doing.
How does the pretty girl decide this is an emergency, then?
We have to see Boreas. It's totally urgent. Please? She forced a smile, which Leo figured must have been killing.